Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hospice News Elevate podcast. I'm Holly Vossel, senior reporter for Hospice News. In this episode, we'll be talking about the state of hospice fraud with Croy Health CEO, Renee McGinnis. We'll be discussing the current landscape of fraud, waste, and abuse in the hospice space. We'll also cover the impacts of fraudulent activity on legitimate providers and what hospices can do to protect patient safety alongside their own sustainability. Renee McGinnis became CEO of Croy Health in 2016. Formerly NVNA and Hospice, the nonprofit home health and hospice organization provides care across Massachusetts' South Shore. Renee has guided the organization to adapt and evolve around reimbursement pressures while building high-quality, sustainable care models. During her tenure, Renee has helped to establish the Croy Health Charitable Fund, through which philanthropic donations have increased by 540%. The funds have fueled the nonprofit health system to expand its innovative care models such as primary palliative care, telehealth, and chronic care management programs. Renee has experience as a skilled clinical and business leader. She is an active member of the Women's Edge, and she has been recognized as one of the top 100 women-led businesses in Massachusetts for 8 consecutive years. Renee has also consistently advocated for policies that recognize the value of high-quality care delivered in the home, such as home health, hospice, and palliative care, and ways to increase access to these services. Renee currently serves on the National Alliance for Care at Home's Advocacy Committee. She has previous experience as the immediate past president of the Board of Directors for the Home Care Alliance of Massachusetts, and she was the past vice chair of the Visiting Nurse Associations of New England. And with that introduction, we'll begin our journey into today's topic. All right, so Renee, I wanted to start off with a genuine note of thanks to you. We're just really grateful to have your insights for today's podcast topic.
Thank you so much, Holly. Great to see you again.
Absolutely. I know we've had a few conversations with some hospice news coverage in the past. So I wanted to kick things off, though, first with a little bit of an introduction to Croy Health and your organization. You just want to tell us about it in a nutshell.
Absolutely. Quickly, Croy Health, we've been around since for now 110 years. And so we are on the 27 towns on the South Shore, south of Boston, Mass. And we do have the full continuum of care, home health care, palliative care, hospice care, and we have a hospice residence in Hingham as well, working closely with all our health systems in the area. But one thing that we really is a differentiator for us is that we do primary palliative care in the home, and no one else is really doing this in the region. So such a need, such a necessity. And we're always fighting the fight to increase access to care for patients by hopefully getting reimbursement that makes sense from the payers, which is traditionally 65% Medicare and then Medicare Advantage and other for our population. Average age is 79 for our patient population. So just a little brief about us, and we are very proud that we're 5 stars quality and 5 stars for patient satisfaction, patient engagement. So if people look us up on Care Compare, they'll be happy to see that our scores are there. So
are up there. Yeah. And I think that all of those pieces of an organization that make it sustainable for that 100, you know, plus years is a really important, and we'll kind of get into that more. So thanks for that introduction. So I think as we're talking today, our topic is really around, you know, the current state of fraud, waste, and abuse in this space. And just what do you think is that from your perspective? We can just start with a kind of definition there.
Yeah. Thank you. So this is so timely. I am on several committees with our national association, the Alliance for Care at Home, and I'm very proud of what they've done working directly with Dr. Oz and his team and, you know, CMS and MedPAC who decide payment structure. So we've been working really closely on program integrity and what does that mean. And Holly, this has been going on for many years, and we've been really focused on, you know, the bad actors and not the good actors, right? So we don't want to be punished with more regulations and less payment or, you know, moratoriums because we're such high quality and we have so much integrity, right, and compliance. But there is a lot of fraud and abuse. There really is. And it's true and it's real. And so what we've done at the Alliance and what we've discussed with the committees in the government is, you know, how do you identify, and using AI now, it should be pretty easy, right? Mm-hmm. How do you identify? Because years ago, it was more upcoding maybe, or people were over-visiting or visiting, billing for patients they actually didn't do all those visits on, which is all fraud, right? But it was a small amount of fraud here and there. And then fast forward, it became a huge amount of fraud, in particular in a county in LA, which they targeted. The statistic here is mind-blowing. So in California, in 2025, there was 161 in the United States new home hospices, mm-hmm. and 527 new home health agencies, right? In California alone, there was 307 new home health agencies and 18 new hospices. But in 2022, they had 546 new hospices. Now, many of them are gone because they've already started to identify. And so what we've done and what the program integrity people are doing at Medicare is they didn't want to put a moratorium on. And we heard them speak at the conference that I was just at for the Alliance Technology and Finance Conference. But they were so overwhelmed with how to get a handle on this and really focus on targeted, audited, you know, fraud, which is what we want, right? So we all don't want a moratorium. But they felt that they had to do a six-month moratorium because they couldn't even get a handle on it. So the goal is and the hope is that new agencies will have different requirements to open. And so what we've recommended is, you know, how do you identify any legitimate business? You know, making sure that they have liability insurance. Site visits have to be done unannounced. And if you're a new agency, a site visit should be done every year for 3 years, not wait till 3 years, which is typically how it works. But I know in the state of Massachusetts, we do have site visits unannounced. And, you know, Department of Public Health oversees along with the audits that we get from the federal government. So this is a more targeted approach. And it's also looking at how do we prevent these organizations from starting new hospices anyway, instead of spending more resources on, you know, what are we doing afterwards? And what's happened with technology and AI, just like with the banking industry, right, is that these are organizations that are, if you will, very, they're criminal organizations that aren't even here, and they're stealing Medicare numbers from you know, the system, right? Your Social Security number, your Medicare number. And they're billing for patients that don't even have hospice. So that's where the crime just escalated with the technology and the ability for people overseas that aren't even here to be able to tap into this protected information. So that became a huge problem, which is why now they've sent out new Medicare cards to everyone. I don't know. I feel like they're always one step ahead of us. The criminals are always one step ahead.
I think it's trying to keep up with the curve of fraud, so to speak.
Because
there's kind of fraud in healthcare in general, but the depth of it when it comes to hospice at the end of life, whether it's a person that you know, needs it or is unaware that that's what's happening. Right. As you mentioned, you know, that they're stealing Medicare numbers and billing without knowledge. So right. I think that this, the the current depth of it is what I've heard as be concerning among hospice providers. So I actually wanted to touch base also. I think you recently published an editorial on that with some of your thoughts on this. Did you want to highlight any of thoughts from there that you haven't already mentioned here in the conversation?
You know, I think the other piece that we talked about was, and we're working really hard on this, messaging, getting the information out there to the consumer. How do you choose a quality home health agency? How do you choose a quality hospice agency? And so many of these organizations that are fraudulent were not submitting their quality data, right? And they would just take the hit for the fine. Well, what we've said to CMS is that's not okay. If they don't submit all the data that we all have to submit, and it, who cares if they pay the fine? That's not okay. They should be, you should stop payment. And that's just not okay. So some of these organizations you wouldn't find on Care Compare because they're not submitting any data. So, you know, look at Care Compare, talk to your physician, talk to your health system, and really identify, and word of mouth is so huge, right? Identify legitimate organizations that you can trust, because we don't want the consumer to not trust the overall health care and health system and the hospice and home health agencies, because most of them are, we're doing good work.
Right.
So I guess that was the other piece we're really working hard on, like how do we message, how do you as the consumer know, especially when you're in a crisis, right? How do you know how to look up, you know, whether it's working with your physician or looking online, how do you know how to find a legitimate organization that has good quality?
Right. And I think that's a question I get all the time as well from readers of Hospice News, is how do you, who might not, you know, the average person doesn't, might not know about, you know, Care Compare or might not know how to do some of the research.
That's
so
true.
There's even, you know, families turning to, you know, things like AI assistants to try to help mm-hmm. them answer that question. So I think that that plays into the next question I had, which is about how, you know, how legitimate hospices, what are they most concerned about when it comes to this fraudulent activity in the hospice space? And you sort of answered it already, is that the concern about misconceptions or misunderstandings about hospice or mistrust mm-hmm. in hospice. Mm-hmm. I've heard that be echoed by other providers. I want to get into some of the other concerns there about what this fraudulent activity means for care.
Right. Well, if you know, if the regulations only continue for the overall population of home health and hospice organizations to escalate, there's a huge cost to that because every time we have an audit, it's time and money, right? And so, that's a concern that we have. How can they do legitimate targeted probes without costing time and money to the organization? So, you know, you have your surveys. There's so many, I think with AI and the technology, and this is what I heard at the conference, is fingers crossed it's going to improve because they're going to be using that technology. All the data we send in when we evaluate a patient, they have right at their fingertips, right? So there should be certain red flags that, you know, allow them to say, hey, we're gonna target and do an audit on you because we found these, you know, five different things. So instead of just random targets, and also, like you said, as organizations, we need to band together with our associations. So even for the consumer, they can call the association, every state has one, right? And say, hey, I'm in this crisis situation. Can you recommend or can you tell me? So they know the quality organizations within the state, and every state, you know, is different. So I think that's important. I'm also a big advocate of the nonprofit community hospice and home health organizations. The reason I say that is we are really committed to the community and the community's committed to us. So we may be raising money to get to break even, in particular for our hospice house, but the community is good to us, and we are then in turn good to the community, and we work with our community hospital as well, committed to the region, not just bottom line driven, which I think is really important in this work.
Yeah. And I think that as we're talking about this, it raises a question as what you see as far as the, you know, most significant obstacles for legitimate hospices as these regulatory, you know, attempts to improve program integrity come about. I guess, and you mentioned things like a lot of time and resources. How are you going to address those kinds of things?
It's an everyday challenge, Holly, because the expenses just keep going up and the revenue just doesn't make it, right? So it really is a challenge for how are you going to grow your organization, stay viable, continue to provide quality care, because that costs education and resources to be able to support your employees. And then recruiting and retaining your employees, because, you know, our reimbursement doesn't, you know, match other healthcare organizations that are offering more money because they can, right?
Right.
Even though they may be struggling their bottom line in the hospitals as well, but they do offer significantly more pay. Mm-hmm. How do you recruit and retain workforce? Because salaries, healthcare benefits, 401k match, it's all important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the biggest challenges, is how do we continue to grow the access to care for patients, because there is a huge need. And then another podcast we could talk about is Medicare Advantage.
Yes, we have talked about that at length, I think, before, especially when the value-based insurance design included the hospice component before it sunsetted. You mentioned, you know, the sort of different methods of supporting the different services that Core Health has, even through that different kind of branching out aside from the traditional Medicare hospice benefit. I think that's works into the fold of this sort of fraud picture, is that you're still having, as you mentioned, the importance of staff during staffing shortages that are happening in the clinical space. I think I want to add one to that I've heard, as far as the ways to the costs of sort of internal auditing before you submit payments or after, and making sure that you're compliant. I think that has been an extra layer, mm-hmm. and extra kind of cost bucket in some cases.
It is. It's absolutely an extra layer. And we have a very big team that just does that, and a compliance officer, and, you know, a lot of internal auditing that we do ourselves for surveys. So yeah, that is an extra layer. The other extra layer, Holly, I'll be honest, is we need to continuously upgrade our technology and add new technology, and no one's reimbursing for that, right? So that's not part of it. So, you know, that's your indirect cost, and it just keeps going up. Medical supplies have gone up significantly. Drug costs have gone up for our hospice patients. So the cost per day has gone up to take care of these patients. So, yeah, that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah, and I think that what's included and not included for your reimbursement, that makes it kind of funnels down to everything else as well. Mm-hmm. What we've also heard of, my colleague's Hospice News senior editor, Jim Parker, has covered this a bit, that we've heard from some organizations that haven't sort of weathered the storm financially, that even though they're legitimate, they were caught up in this and ultimately had to close for some of the auditing costs. So I think that as we look through this big picture of what fraud is meaning and the kind of trickle impacts, it's what we're hearing a lot of is kind of trying that moratorium is an effort to sort of stop it from happening. But what's going to happen after that it's lifted? And that, you know, it's only supposed to be temporary for 6 months. Right. And we're a couple months into it at this point. So let's see what happens next. But I think that the last question to really explore here, even though there's probably way more, but I think that a really important question to sort of end on here is, you know, how can hospices work to make sure that their patient safety, family safety, and then just, you know, their own sustainability to continue meeting the demand that you've mentioned? What are your thoughts on that, Renee?
Yeah, I mean, I think, are you talking about patient safety in terms of the fraud and abuse that's happening?
Yeah, how can you kind of safeguard and protect that program integrity and your own sustainability and ability to reach those patients?
Right, right, absolutely. So yeah. I think, you know, when we look at the you know, safety concerns, typically these fraudulent companies are not even really, some are, aren't truly really caring for patients, to be honest with you. It's more fraud that's cyber fraud in a way. Yeah. There are some organizations that would bill for visits not made. And I always say to people, you do get something from Medicare saying, you know, these are the charges, right? Check it, evaluate it. You know, for us, I mean, we are all about compliance. And so we have visit verifications. We have so many things in place to verify visits, documentation, auditing. Like you said, we review 100% of the documentation in OASIS before we send it out. And then we really commit to the survey. So I always say to families and patients, you know, for home health patients, for hospice, it would be families, fill out that survey. And if something's not okay, we want to know, right? Let us know. And also, you know, really vet out the organization that someone's recommending to you. So there are other ways that you can do that and really talk to your healthcare providers that you trust. But also if you live in a community and you know people in the community, ask the people in the community. Because typically they know and they've experienced or someone they know has experienced. And that's sort of the best really star you can get. And safety is always a big concern. Safety of employees and safety of patients and families. So we're always looking at like how can we improve safety. In particular, some of our patients, they're not safe to pass at home. They're alone. They don't have the right resources. And we have the hospice house, which is great because we can offer that opportunity to them. And if they can't afford the room and board, then we do fundraising for that. So,
yeah, I think having that kind of ability to do that and the resources to provide a resource for your community is helpful.
We are blessed for that.
I think that there's a lot of people who don't have that access. And I think that was a concern, too, is that if all of this fraudulent activity, what does it mean for the future? Will it make it harder to access? Will it make it harder to, you know, meet eligibility requirements? I think there's a lot of, you know, unknowns here. So I really appreciate and thank you so much, Renee, for sharing your thoughts on this and your time with our podcast listeners. It wasn't an easy topic to get through. You know, it's a very complex one. So
it is a complex one. And there's so much information out there, detailed information. And you know, you can go to even the CMS website. There's different ways you can find information. And the Alliance for Care at Home always has information on their website. But I think the consumer podcast listeners should just know that, you know, this is not a political issue. This is really people thinking about and caring about how do we increase access to care for patients. And to your point, we don't want an overall moratorium. So how do we prevent that from happening so that there is access and there are legitimate organizations that are able to thrive and new organizations that can come to the market?
Right. But where there's people that don't have the resources.
Exactly.
And those unserved communities. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we illuminated some important points for everyone. But again, thanks so much, Renee, for your time today. It was really a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Holly. Hope to see you soon.
Well, thanks to all who tuned in to today's Hospice News Elevate podcast. A note before we go that we encourage and invite others to share their perspectives on the podcast airwaves with us. Let us know if you or others are interested in participating or sponsoring the podcast. Reach out to us at editor@hospicenews.com. Once again, I'm Holly Vossel, Senior Reporter for Hospice News and Aerofly Company. Thanks for listening to today's Elevate podcast, and stay tuned for more episodes. Take care for now.